Yes, it's that time of the week where we talk to the wonderful Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
How are you, my dear?
I'm great, thank you. Lovely to have you with us today. Now, Dennis, last time we spoke, you talked about cognitive decline and you referred to it as perhaps a growing phenomenon in modern society. You mentioned two herbs that have a reputation of helping resist cognitive decline, ginkgo biloba and Spanish sage. But you also expressed your opinion that cognitive decline was multifactorial, and whilst herbal usage was a potential treatment for it, preventing and also when the early signs of it were evident, societal factors could be said to be causative factors and should be addressed. What do you mean by this?
Well, that's a very good question. I think we started or looked at this briefly last time we met, but what I was trying to get over to listeners is that this growing observation or growing phenomenon of cognitive decline could be seen as being something more than just a physical or physiological factor associated with a physiological factor, but could be seen also as related to factors that precipitate, perhaps, some of the physiological changes that take place in dementia and certainly in Alzheimer's. And I think this is frequently overlooked. What I'm trying to say here is that there could be other contributing factors that predispose or encourage a cognitive decline, that is, a decline in basic functions such as memory, recall, observation, all those factors that have a lot to do with communication and interpretation. Cognitive factors are very, very important. Without them, we're at a severe disadvantage. And obviously people who've heard of Alzheimer's, well, arguably Alzheimer's is a classic and perhaps the best example of cognitive decline. Now, my contention is that whilst I believe both medically and within the area of complementary medicine or natural medicine, which is my expert area, I would like to think, I believe that there are some approaches or some factors that need to be considered. And I would argue, and I should say that my opinion basically is, that cognitive decline could be associated with what I've tried to limit to three crucial factors. The first one being what I spoke briefly about last time we met, and that is loneliness or alienation, bringing with it a lack of socialisation. The second thing I think could be seen as an encouraging factor for cognitive decline is what I've briefly put down on my notes, watching rather than reading.
Yes.
And what I mean by that...
It's too much screen time.
I think, yes, you put it very nicely, my dear.
Yes.
I didn't want to be seen as an antagonist for every aspect of modern society. But what I was trying to get over there is that the emphasis on reading and all that reading brings with it, the challenge to our imagination, an increase in our vocabulary, an introduction to philosophy, ideas of many centuries, all that I would contend in the modern world is being increasingly eroded by our obsession with watching rather than reading. And the third thing I contend is a factor that could be seen to be associated with what I consider to be an acceleration in cognitive decline is the emphasis these days on what I would colloquially refer to as junk food rather than food as we used to know it, with an emphasis on home food. Now, look, I don't want listeners to think that I'm a wowser. I'm not. Most people know that I'm not. Certainly anyone that's had anything to do with me. But what I guess I'm trying to say is that despite the fact that now and then I might enjoy a Macca's or some other good food and take the grandkids and shortly the great-grandkids occasionally along to go along and enjoy that treat, what I'm concerned about is we are losing the real skill and art and beauty of being able to see food prepared in the old way with all that goes with it may in fact be a factor that also needs to be brought into play, that food as we knew it, food that was home-cooked, fresh, and indeed food from various sources, cannot take the place of what is happening in our society. That is, fast food is now becoming in many ways the norm, and with it I would contend it contributes towards an acceleration of cognitive decline. Now, I'm going to be probably shot out of the water for saying those things, but I've been listening to people's problems and observing the human condition in a professional way now for over 50 years. I keep saying to myself, listen, I'm an old man, and I am, and that entitles me to say...
Distinguished.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but put it that way. Okay. And I would like to say that those factors that I've mentioned have been things that I've noted, observed and thought about and hypothesised during my career. And now that it's coming to an end, I would like it said that this thing that we resist, this thing that's on the march, in my opinion, can be resisted by socialisation. Don't become isolated. Socialisation. Join your men's club, your women's club, the men's shed, the women's shed, all those organisations that promote getting out of the house, socialising, not isolating oneself. Secondarily, start to read again. Patronise our libraries again. Pick up a good book. Smell a good book. It's wonderful to be able to smell a good book. And thirdly, look at what you're eating. Get back to doing your own cooking. It's a joy. It's great. And I'm not a bad cook. I won't say any more about that because my wife would probably be listening to me. Okay, so there you go.
There you go. Well, before we open a giant can of worms, which you may have already, we will we'll invite anyone to call that would like to ask Dennis Stewart a question that's health related. And we should have a Catherine on the line. Catherine, are you there?
Yes, I am. Oh. Hello, Amanda, and hello, Dennis.
Hello, Catherine. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, good.
Now, you've got my call. That's all right. You wanted to talk about tonsil stones. I've never heard of those.
Yes, I'm suffering at the moment with some tonsil stones, and I have been gargling with salt water. Do you recommend anything else, Dennis?
Do you regularly get them?
No, first time.
Okay, and your doctor has diagnosed them?
Well, I haven't been to the doctor, no.
Oh, you know my view on this, I think. If this is a first-time thing, I think you would be wise to present to your good GP to make sure that your condition is as what you think it is and get his opinion on what to do and where to go. But let me just put it to you. How long have you been battling with these?
Only since yesterday.
Okay. How do you know it is a stone in your tonsil?
Oh, they're quite swollen. It's only on one side too.
Okay. Do you normally get swollen tonsils?
No.
Do you regularly get tonsillitis?
No.
Okay.
I did. The dentist a few years back said to me that he can see some tonsil stones in there. I said, what do I do about them? He said, you don't do nothing about them until they actually present and looks like they've decided to get infected.
Well, look, if they are becoming infected, that makes me even more concerned.
Right.
There are herbs that have been used and used sometimes successfully in addressing what's called tonsillitis, but this is a slightly different condition. This is the presence of an abnormality in the tonsil. The best advice that I would give, my dear, and I dare not give any other advice, is, look, have a yarn with your GP.
Okay, fine.
Right.
I was hoping for something more like natural, though.
Well, sometimes natural medicine is the best, sometimes it isn't, and when you're not sure what it is, that's when you need to get a professional opinion from your good doctor.
Right, okay. You don't think they'll prescribe antibiotics or anything like that?
Your doctor would make the best decision on
that.
Yes.
Okay, then.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank
you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye. And next on the line, we have Di from Valentine. Hi, Di, how can we help you?
Yeah, good afternoon. So I'm just ringing. I've got a varicose vein on my leg at the top, like on my thigh.
Yes.
It's not painful. It's just unsightly. It's one of those wobbly, yucky-looking, bubbly varicose veins. And I was just wondering, is there something that I can be doing to rub on it to help?
Obviously, it is a large vein.
Yes, it is. Yep.
Have you discussed it with your doctor?
Not at this point, no.
Okay. And it's not painful?
No, not at all.
Look, I'm always concerned about venous conditions that are abnormal.
Okay.
It's not unusual for any of us to have varicosity of the veins. They can become serious, but in your case, they're just ugly, as you put it.
Yes.
In some of the herbal references, topical applications based on a distilled extract of witch hazel, which is easily procured. Well, I say easily procured, usually procured from your pharmacist. It's a preparation that is applied when convenient on a pad or a bandage, lightly, let me emphasise, lightly around the area where the vein is. Distilled extract of witch hazel is what's called an astringent herb and has a reputation for addressing varicose conditions. Whether or not yours will impressively reduce, that's questionable, but distilled extract of witch hazel is harmless. The other thing, the Hewlett Parsons was a very famous English herbalist. He wrote a great book which helped me greatly as a young practitioner. He recommended the topical applications of the fluid extract of calendula. Now, calendula is great marigold, and it can be obtained in a liquid form as a liquid extract and applied similarly as a topical application to the area, lightly bound around the area. You would not want to in any way at all affect circulation, far from it. But a lightly bound calendula, or some would prefer a topical application of calendula ointment, which can be applied and left on probably more easily. There are two things that are very useful. But look, it may not be too late yet to get the advantage of using what are called oral flavonoids, bioflavonoids. Now, there is a bioflavonoid known as rutin, R-U-T-I-N. Now, rutin is a very effective bioflavonoid and is directly related to circulatory problems, to varicosity, and successful depending upon the level of varicosity and the damage to the vein. Being a fairly old chap, being in my late teens, I have one or two varicose veins, and my wife ensures that I take bioflavonoids regularly, and I do so. And I think she's right. She might have learnt a little bit along the way from me, even though I didn't. So the use,
very good.
The use of bioflavonoids.
Yep, so I guess my question then would be, where would I get the calendula ointment from?
Okay, look, a good health food store, and we have plenty of them. Go to your health food store. There are a number of manufacturers of calendula ointment in Australia, and I'll not mention names, but your health food store would know of them, and I would be very surprised if they didn't have an address for calendula ointment. If you have difficulty, you can always contact my rooms in Yulampton, but go to your health food store and get hold of that. And similarly, with bioflavonoids, which I mentioned to listeners, are a good starting base for varicose vein conditions, certainly in their earliest stage. You can easily procure those from your health food store or certainly from your pharmacy. That's not a bad approach, but again, it largely depends upon how distorted the vein is, how comfortable or uncomfortable it is. With those sorts of conditions, you always need to watch out for clots, particularly if they're large veins, and then you could be in trouble. So even with venous conditions, it's wise to have a yarn with your GP down there so that he can keep an eye on it and assure you that there's nothing abnormal occurring there that might be affecting seriously your peripheral circulation.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you so much for that help.
Okay, thank you.
Dennis, you spoke last time about the discovery and use of ginkgo biloba, but you only briefly touched on Spanish sage. Could you explain its traditional usage and the modern day explanation for its emerging benefit?
Yes, look, I've decided to touch on this emerging significant herb because years ago, I believe that I was the first in this country to give lectures on the emerging significance of the herb ginkgo biloba. And I gave the first lectures on ginkgo at the auditorium of Blackmore's factory at Balgowlah. That was the beginning of the introduction of ginkgo biloba into Australia. Previously, it had been developed and was even then popularly being used in Europe as a primary, a natural medicine way of resisting dementia and lessening the onset of Alzheimer's. That was many years ago. Now, I've been interested in this topic of what you might call resisting this condition, which, as I've said even today again, is becoming more and more obvious and more experienced, unfortunately, with younger people. Today I want to touch on this herb, which I'm not aware of anyone else in this country, in our profession at least, speaking about this particular herb known as Spanish sage, which in Europe is already, and in Britain, is being used as a natural medicine potential remedy to lessen the onset of cognitive decline, particularly where there is early evidence that it is beginning to assert itself. Indeed, the herb Spanish sage is now put into a very technical format in some of the articles that have been written on it. For instance, an article entitled Sage for Dementia Therapy, Review of Pharmacological Activity and Pilot Tolerability Clinical Trial that occurred in the journal Pharmacology, Biochemistry and Behaviour way back in 2003 was just one paper starting to bring forth scientific and clinical evidence suggesting that Spanish sage did have a role to play. And that acceleration of interest has continued. And in Europe and in Britain now, products are available based on this particular species of sage and are coming in fairly sophisticated forms. Now, sage is sage. Well, it isn't. There are many species of sage. The most common sage is Salvia officinalis, and that is the sage that's popularly available over the counter. It's even in supermarkets. It's well known. I have spoken about common sage, Salvia officinalis, in the context of its most popular use in herbal medicine, and that is as a remedy that's referred to as an antihydrotic. And that's a technical term, but basically what it means is that a sage, or this particular common form of sage, Salvia officinalis, has a role to play in addressing perspiration, as in the menopause, or perspiration, as in the treatment of certain conditions, certain therapies that will, as a side effect, promote perspirational activity. Common sage is still an underused and underappreciated remedy for conditions characterised by abnormal perspiration. For instance, you frequently see people presenting with palms of the hands that drip with perspiration. And there's not a lot that can be done for that Well, with reference to sage, it frequently used as a common herbal tea, sage officinalis, could be of some use, but that's by the way.
Okay.
The species that is being now used to harvest the benefits of sage is salvia. Salvia, certainly it's a species of salvia, but it is Salvia lavendula. Salvia lavendula is the species separate from Salvia officinalis, in other words, Spanish sage as it's popularly known, is that species from which has been taken the potential to address the early signs of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. Spanish sage, Salvia lavendula.
Okay, well, it's interesting, actually. I'm taking notes about this, especially for menopause. but in the meantime, we've got Tanya from Hinton on the line. Hi, Tanya. Thank you for holding. You want to talk about Parkinson's disease?
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you, Tanya?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good. How can we help?
Just recently been diagnosed with early stage Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
At the moment, it's just a tremor in the left hand, upper limb.
Yes.
Nowhere else at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, I've always had a benign sort of tremor in over the years and tended to ignore it, but this seemed to be getting worse, so I took myself off and saw a neurologist and was quite surprised that he diagnosed early stage Parkinson's disease.
Yes.
No cognitive or anything else going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So just wondering, any suggestions about complementary medicine that goes with any of the medication that I'm taking?
Okay.
And also any suggestions on long-term management as well?
Now, let me ask a question. Has your neurologist or your GP prescribed Matapar for you yet?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I started another brand. I've forgotten what it was, and I was quite ill from it. So I've now changed over to Manipar and doing a gradual increase, just simply a quarter of a pill.
Okay.
Three times a day, and eventually work up to one pill three times a day.
Well, your condition is a very common condition, and most patients would have heard of Parkinson's or know someone who has Parkinson's disease. To try to briefly describe it, it's a convulsive type disease, like a tremor. But you rightly differentiated, there is what's called a benign tremor, which is very common. People talk about being embarrassed because they can't hold a cup of tea because of this tremor that they have, which has been diagnosed and rightly shown to be benign. In other words, it might be inconvenient, but it's not Parkinson's. Parkinson's, unfortunately, tends to be a progressive disease. And drugs of choice are there, and your neurologist, together with your GP, is obviously right on the money. But I had an interesting incident in recent times where a gentleman from the Central Coast came to my rooms, and he had developed Parkinson's disease subsequent to having a vaccination. Now, I'm not an anti-vaxxer, I'm just stating the truth. And he developed the tremor very, very quickly. So he went to a neurologist via a referral from his GP, and his neurologist stated quite bluntly that he was in the early stages of Parkinson's, and as far as the was concerned, this was an unfortunate reaction to a particular vaccination therapy that he had. Now, I'm a user of vaccines where appropriate, so I say it again, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. The neurologist did say to this gentleman, however, that before he went down the pathway of prescribing medications for it, he would urge him to seek benefit, if available, within what you might refer to as complementary medicine or natural medicine, hence his being at my rooms. Now, I have no answer to Parkinson's disease, but, and I say but, there is a very interesting case that's been well documented and well written on the observed benefit of vitamin B1 in increasing dosages as having some potential benefit to lessen the development of the disease, and even with some medications can work with it, because vitamin B1, as you know, is a water-soluble vitamin, is unlikely to be of any toxic nature. And the book that has been written on the B1 therapy, very interestingly, is the rendition of the work that has been carried out by, I think he's Italian or Spanish, but a European doctor, a neurologist, whose work was centred around his use of vitamin B1. And he wrote a book. I have copies of that book in my rooms at New Lambton. I'm not saying it is the answer, but I have a number of clients, I'll call them that, patients who are using it. And I believe there is emerging evidence in some of them that there could be some changes based on his protocol of using vitamin B1 in conjunction with his GP monitoring him and himself monitoring any changes that take place. Book written on the work of a European neurologist suggesting, or more than that, articulating the benefits of vitamin B1 therapy as perhaps a useful thing to append or start on with your doctor's notice.
Thank you. Yeah, good luck with it, Tanya. This is Health Naturally on 2NURFM with Dennis Stewart. Now, Dennis, you were talking about sage and you want to add a little bit more?
Yes, very quickly. Again, I emphasise that this is salvia of a different species, if you like. This is Spanish sage, salvia lavendula. And the thing with it is, if it is to be used, it has to be used in the right dosage. And therefore, I'm counselling people that if it is to be useful, you have to use it and use it in a way that extracts the essential oil from the dried herb. There are sophisticated preparations available that counteract any problems with dosage, but dosage is critical for it in order to use it. That's the first thing. We know, or we suspect, that it works because what it does, it hinders a particular enzyme called acetylcholinesterase, or esterase, which is an enzyme which interferes with acetylcholine within brain tissue. Now, I'm not going to say any more because that's getting too medical for most listeners to understand, but the theory is here you have something that hinders a destructive enzyme action which is considered to be associated with the decline in a person's cognitive activity. So there is an emerging pharmacological explanation as to how the constituents of Spanish sage interfere with that enzyme that is destructive as far as cognitive activity is concerned. I'll say no more because that's technical, but I'll refer again listeners that might be interested to the Journal of Pharmacology, Biochemistry and Behaviour, and the article entitled Sage for Dementia Therapy that goes back to about 2003. Enough said.
Okay, well, we've got a few minutes left. So in a few minutes, can you just explain this? Apart from ginkgo biloba and Spanish sage, what other herbs have a history of benefit in helping resist dementia and Alzheimer's disease?
Well, one that's very, very popularly used in India, where a lot of herbal knowledge is based, by the way, Ayurvedic medicine that I've lectured on and incorporate to some extent in my own practice of herbal medicine, is a great body of wealth as far as knowledge of herbs is concerned. Now, they have used in their history of Ayurvedic medicine, which goes back thousands of years, they have used the herb gotchakola, G-O-T-U-K-O-L-A, gotchakola, botanically known as Hydrocotyl Asiatica. They refer to it in Sanskrit as a Brahmi herb. And what does a Brahmi herb mean? It's a herb that is used to promote concentration and was taken up by the great writers of the Vedas, who a couple of thousand years before our Lord wrote the documents that constitute the Vedic literature. And they used gotchakola, Hydrocotyl Asiatica, as a Brahmi herb to promote focus, concentration and memory. So that Indian herb is perhaps on par with some of the emerging European herbs, ginkgo and also Spanish sage. And if I get a chance, I'll talk about gotchakola because it has properties that transcend just its usefulness as a Brahmi remedy used to promote concentration and focus.
Okay, and is that the only one that you've got?
Well, that's the primary one, and we could talk about that all day, but I won't. But I'll
remind. You've got 45 seconds to talk about it.
I'll remind listeners of all that I have said over various sessions about the remarkable herb Panax ginseng. You would have heard me refer to the literature of Dr. Rudolf Weiss, whose book on herbal medicine gives one of the most explicit and well-documented protocols or monographs on the herb of Panax ginseng and how, as an anti-aging remedy, he puts it forward as being able to resist the ravages of aging. One of perhaps is cognitive decline.
Well, it's been an interesting show and, we look forward to hearing more about it next week. Thank you very much, Dennis Stewart.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Health Naturally on 2NURFM.